Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
The bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory? If you meet the Undertaker, or the young man from the crew, have a pint with what's left over. Now I say goodbye to you. For the bells of hell go ting-a-ling-a-ling for you, but not for me. Oh, death, where is thy sting-a-ling-a-ling, or grave thy victory?
Well, if it's Sunday here on WBAI, you have now entered the church of WBAI with Archbishop Malachy McCourt, who will be praying for the next hour. Are you with us, Archbishop? Whoops. Well, we were hoping, and I know he's not far away because Shauna told me he had clicked on. He probably doesn't have the audio. But we have a full lineup today, which means two guests for in the hour. And Malachy, when you do get on, just jump in whenever, because I'll announce who the guests are. Anybody who's been listening to us over the decades know there's a protest that goes on at Shannon Airport about the U.S. military planes that are coming in to invade the countries in the Middle East. And there's been trials throughout the last 10, 20 years. We used to have on Mary Kelly when she took an axe to one of the planes. We had Tarek Koff and Ken Myers, Veterans for Peace here in the United States, when they were on trial last year. And now we're going to have on today Edward Horgan. His trial just ended last week, where he was found guilty on trespassing at Shannon Airport, but not for spray painting one of the U.S. warplanes. And we'll talk to Edward about that in about 10 minutes. And today, you might not have noticed this if you weren't on the internet, but today the Super Bowl is being played. So we figured there's only one person to go to if you want to talk about gambling and the Super Bowl, and that's our own WBAI's own bookie, Billy O'Connor, who has a book out called The Bronx Bookie, where he was a bookie in the South Bronx. He's going to talk us about the new apps, FanDuel, and that are on phones, and people are just gambling, you know, anywhere you want. You don't have to go to casinos. So Billy O'Connor will be giving us the latest on that. And just a couple of quick announcements. Last week we had the great comedian Maureen Lagan on, and she's doing a play up on Bail Buck on 238th Street called The Daughters of a Garbage Man, about her father growing up in the South Bronx. And that's next Saturday and Sunday, the 18th and 19th, of which Malachy McCourt and myself will be there on Sunday for the 2 o'clock show. So if you're in and around the area, stop by on Bail Buck. It's a great place. You get to eat there and hang out and then see a play. And also, speaking of plays, my one-man show, Off the Meter, we'll be heading to Albany in March. The tickets are not on sale yet, but I'm going to the Irish American Heritage Museum in Albany, where I've been invited by Elizabeth Stack, who runs the place, on March 25th. It's a Saturday. It's a long way off. Just keep that in your calendar. And if you're into traditional music, there's no better week than this week at the Wolfhound over at 30th Avenue and Steinway Street in Astoria, where from the 13th to the 19th, it's going to be all traditional music all day. So go to their website, The Wolfhound in Astoria, and you can get some of the best Irish traditional music that will be going on in the city in Astoria. And Malachy, have you creeped in yet? Or maybe it might be time for us to go to phone and get Malachy on the landline. As I said, our first guest will be Edward Horgan, who was a member of the Irish Army, and now he's a peace activist. As a matter of fact, he just came from Shannon Airport today. And about 10 years ago, or over 10 years ago, we had Mary Kelly, who was at the peace encampment at Shannon, broke through the fence and took an axe to one of the warplanes. And my good friend Brian Moore came up with the poem. And it went, Mary Kelly had an axe and she gave the U.S. warplane 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave the warplane 41. So keeping in that tradition, although what Edward went with was a spray can, and let me just see, what he sprayed on the side of the U.S. warplane was danger, danger, don't fly. And that he was not convicted of this week, but he was convicted of trespassing onto the airport at Shannon. And we'll get Edward's take on keeping up this tradition of highlighting Ireland as a neutral country is allowing its airport to be used for refueling and sending troops and ammunition and everything to the Middle East for our never-ending wars, whether it's in Syria, Iraq, or Afghanistan. So we'll be talking to Edward about that in a little while. And as I said, our second guest, and we might take phone calls if you're on good behavior, because the last time I took phone calls when I was out at Coney Island, I think it was New Year's Day, the audience wasn't that helpful to us, and it keeps Sean on the ball having to hit the delete button every time someone call in. But we'll see. We have Billy O'Connor coming on, born in Cork, raised in the Bronx, was in the U.S. Army in Vietnam, came back, was on the fire department, and also as a side hustle, he was a bookie in the South Bronx. I remember he said one time he was gambling so much money, he said he might as well become a bookie and be his own best customer. So we'll be talking to Billy about now the new ways of gambling. I mean, these apps that are on people's phones, you could be sitting at the bar and just betting live. You don't have to go to the casino, or you don't even have to go to your local bookie in the neighborhood to place bets on the Super Bowl. You could do it on the phone. The only bad thing about doing it on the phone, if you do win, which sometimes you might win, you'll have to pay taxes on it. Whereas you go to your local bookie and bet, you do not have to pay any taxes. Although sometimes they might come looking for you if you made a bet and you didn't pay it and you lost. But that'll be another story I'll talk to Billy O'Connor about later. But is there any chance that Maliki made it on yet, Sean?
I think I'm here.
Maliki, good God, yes. Come on, it's Sunday. You had me preaching there for the last 8 minutes.
And
we almost have to go over to Ireland soon.
I must say that I have no disputes with your sermons. They're very good. And you
well, I've learned from the best.
Eloquent tongue. And it being Sunday, you don't have to kneel down to listen to this program. You can sit up. We will give you that privilege. But what we need is your attention and your money. And B-A-I-W-B. I wonder what that means. What do these call letters mean? I remember when I was at WMCA, named after a hotel called the MacArthur Hotel. But and ABC, of course, American Broadcasting, CBS is Columbia, and NBC is National. And they all have these appellations, and we have WBAI. And I often wondered, what does that mean, John?
You know what? Maliki, before we head over to Ireland, I know you wanted to talk about the earthquake in Turkey and Syria before we head over to Edward.
Yes, indeed, John. It was the death roll there now. It was the last time I looked was 28,000, and I heard there was out of somewhere there, kind of like an afterthought, there was something about a whole family from Queens, and I heard one man saying that, and this hit home to me particularly, was that he could hear his grandchildren under the rubble, screaming for help, and he couldn't help them in any way. And it was so sad that in a short time that your life and your family come to an end. And here we, you know, complain about, oh, the subway was late, the subway was crowded, there was, it rained, it was a bit of snow, all kinds of complaints about what goes on in life itself. And all that, and I'm 91, and I figure that my own mortality rate is high. When you look at it, my family's life lasted from a baby girl who died in Brooklyn, which caused us to head off for Ireland. My mother, father, Frank McCourt, Malachy McCourt, the twins, Oliver and Eugene, and off we went to Ireland. So then, in 3 years, Oliver died, and then in 6 months later, Eugene died, and then Mike and Alfie were born, and we, four of us, grew to adulthood, and then they have all died. Frank died. None of them reached 80. I'm the only one, and I don't know why I am the remaining survivor of that crowd of McCourts. And it's, but it is two people die every second in somewhere in the world. But that average was destroyed in by an earthquake. Up all their people went, 28,000 men, women, and children. And death has no, it doesn't discriminate at all. It's very, it'll take anybody, old and young. And we have in the United States, people do not die. They pass away. They leave us. They're gone. They're no longer with us. They're with the Lord. They're in hell. They're in heaven. They're in purgatory. I think limbo is still in action. But it is, the word death is never. And there are a couple of hundred, 2,000 undertakers in New York. And you look at them in their windows, and you think they were in the stone business. All you see are pebbles and artificial flowers, and nothing about what they really do, which is they're funeral undertakers, and they take people away, and they burn them or put them in furnaces, or they... I don't know what to do with them anymore. Anyway.
You know what, Malachy?
Anyway, that's my occupation these days, John.
All right, so I wanted to move on. Yes. I'm going to play a song now by, famous singer Donovan, who's born in Glasgow, but he lives in Cork now, and it's called The Universal Soldier, and it really goes out to you, Malachy, the Air Force. I was in the Army stationed in Germany during the Vietnam War. Billy O'Connor was in Thailand and Vietnam. And Edward Horgan, who's going to be our next guest, was in the Irish Army. So when we come out of the song, we head over to speak with Edward and his trial that happened this week.
He's 5 foot 2. And he's 6 feet 4. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Lobau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there, and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war.
Oh, yes, and that was Donovan out of Cork at the moment where he's
well
living.
Well done, John.
Yeah, well, listen, this show here, Maliki, we were the universal soldiers. I was in the Army. You were in the Air Force. Billy O'Connor was in the Army. And our next guest, Edward Horgan, was in the Irish Army. Edward, can you tell us about your journey and background of how you were a universal soldier like the rest of us and ended up at a peace campment at Shannon Airport?
No, John. First of all, give my best regards to Maliki McCourt.
I'm right here
at the moment. Hello, Maliki.
Good morning, or good afternoon there, isn't it?
It's good afternoon here in Limerick.
And all right, gotcha.
Which Maliki knows well. But yes, my journey, I joined the Irish Defence Forces in 1963, served for 22 years, which included several tours of duty as a UN, United Nations military peacekeeper. But coming up to the more present time, almost 6 years ago, I went over the fence at Shannon Airport with a colleague called Dan Dowling, and there were two US Navy aircraft at Shannon Airport in breach of Irish international laws on neutrality. So we entered the airport, and we managed, even though at the time I was over 73 years of age, we managed to climb over the fence, a 7-foot fence, without doing any damage to the fence. And we entered the airport, in spite of the fact that the planes were being guarded by both an Irish police team and also by an Irish military team who were armed. We managed to get up to one of the aircraft and write the words, "Danger, danger, do not fly," on the engine of a US Navy C-40 aircraft. So clearly, we expected to be arrested and were, and we expected to be brought to court reasonably quickly after that. But it took almost 6 years for the Irish state to bring us to the courts, and that was eventually concluded just 2 weeks ago.
And
tell us about the... Go ahead,
what
now.
Are you charged with?
We were charged with criminal damage to the aircraft, even though the a detective sergeant who examined the aircraft in a previous hearing stated that the amount of the damage to the aircraft was of no monetary value, so it should never have got to the courts in the first place. But the state was using the courts process and misusing it to inconvenience us as much as possible, which they succeeded in doing. We were also charged with trespass. We were eventually, after a 10-day trial and lots of witnesses, it was a jury trial. We were found not guilty of criminal damage due to a clause in Irish legislation called lawful excuse. So the jury ruled that we had lawful excuse to do what we did, even though it was virtually no damage. They found us guilty of trespass, which of course they shouldn't have done, because the only reason for our trespass was to do the lawful excuse writing on the aircraft. At the same time, the judge in the case gave us what's known as the benefit of the Probation Act. so that no criminal record would go on our record, provided we made a contribution of €5,000 each to a local charity, which we agreed to.
Edward, I just wanted to thank you. You came to my play at the Sean O'Casey Theatre, and I was honored that you were at the play in Dublin, and you gave me a Veterans for Peace Ireland sweatshirt. But during you presented your own defense. What was your defense? You didn't have a lawyer. You admitted to what you were doing. But what did you tell that Shannon Airport was being used for as part of your defense? You came up with the casualty numbers of what's going on.
Yes, a large part of my defense, in fact, was justification. I'm involved with a separate project called Naming the Children. I started this about a year or two before the incident, which happened on the 25th of April 2017. We had come up with a fairly dreadful statistic that since the first Gulf War in 91, up to, in fact, probably now slightly more than 1 million children have died due to wars led by the United States and NATO across the wider Middle East, from Libya to Afghanistan. And this is a horrific statistic. In particular, in my trial, I made reference to this and to three specific incidents. One was the Israeli attack against Gaza in 2014, in which at least 547 children were killed, in addition, of course, to a whole lot of adults as well. When I went into the airport almost 6 years ago, I was carrying a folder called Naming the Children, with over 1,000 names of children killed in the Middle East, being facilitated by Shannon Airport. Ireland is a neutral country, is not allowed to allow belligerent troops, which the United States was, pass through its airport on their way to war. There were two more incidents closer to our date. One was the attack in Yemen on the 29th of January 2017, just 3 months before our action at Shannon Airport. This was the first action by newly elected Donald Trump, President of the United States. In that action, at least 10 children were killed, including one young lady who got a lot of international publicity, called Norber Aralaki. Both her father and her older brother had already been killed in drone strikes in Yemen by United States drone strikes. The third incident was the more serious one. It happened just 10 days before our incident in April 2017, in which 80 children were killed in a horrific attack. Civilians were being evacuated, primarily women and children, from two small towns called Al-Fua and Kafria. And when they approached the crossing point near Aleppo, they were attacked by a suicide bomber who pulled up in a car and started distributing sweets and cakes and soft drinks to the starving children. The children swarmed around the car. The suicide bomber in the car blew the car up, including himself, killing about 110 people, 80 of whom were little children. So this happened literally 10 days before our action. And this is what prompted me. We knew that all these incidents were being facilitated by US military use of Shannon Airport, directly and indirectly. And I explained this in detail to the jury at my trial, and for that reason, they ruled that the actions we were taking were justified. Now, clearly, we could have done a lot more damage, but we choose to do the minimum amount of damage. But our actions was to inform the Irish people of what is going on continuously at Shannon Airport in breach of Irish and international laws.
And who was the prosecuting authority that prosecuted you?
It would be the Irish state.
Yes.
And I suppose in reality, when one challenges two states, as we were doing, we were challenging the Irish state And the US government also will have to expect a bit of blowback. And we definitely received that. It was designed to inconvenience us as much as possible. But at the same time, we got a lot of very positive media exposure, which was part of our objective. But my primary purpose, and is my ongoing primary purpose, to try and highlight the killing of innocent children, and is going on right now in the meantime. There are other related issues. I know Maliki mentioned the dreadful earthquakes in Turkey and in Syria in recent times. As it happens, I worked extensively in that part of Turkey in 2015. I was observing the elections there with the European Union at the time, and I happened to be spend 6 weeks in the five provinces that were devastated in these earthquakes. I also visited Aleppo in 2017, just 6 months after our incidents, and I saw the devastation in Aleppo, and I now know, in fact, that Aleppo has been devastated once again. Almost no building has been left intact in Aleppo. But there's a huge problem at the moment. The US and the European Union are imposing sanctions on all of Syria, just controlled by the Syrian government. This had been causing deaths all along, but now with the dreadful earthquake in that part of Syria, children and adults are dying because of these sanctions imposed by the US and our own European Union, of which Irish is a member. So I have been also campaigning in the meantime, and have written letters to a number of Irish papers in the last week or so, complaining about the sanctions that are killing people. And these are at the behest of the US, but Ireland is a willing partner also in this matter.
And what is the reason for allowing these war planes to land at Shannon?
It's all the wrong reasons. Shannon Airport are making a small amount of money, so it's grubby US dollars, basically. But also, our Irish governments are leaning over backwards with United States. I would suggest maybe that there are more reasons behind the scene, including possible corruptions. The Irish taxpayer is gaining nothing, in fact, from US military use of Shannon Airport. On the contrary, it has cost the Irish taxpayer over the last 20 years in the region of 100 million euro, which is much the same as $100 million, because we have a ridiculous agreement with the United States that Ireland pays all the air traffic control fees for all US military planes, not only landing in Shannon, but flying to Irish airspace. And this has amounted to over 60 million euro. Addition, the additional cost of security at Shannon Airport caused by the US military amounts to a further 40 million euro. So a total of 100 million euro is paid by the Irish taxpayer to facilitate US military use of Shannon Airport. So it's really a crazy project benefiting nobody and causing the deaths of many people directly and indirectly.
Well, John says, this is you told me that when these planes land at Shannon, that the soldiers swarm into the duty free and clear them out practically of all goods. And they walk away with liquor, cigarettes, and all kinds of things duty free.
Well,
who gains that money?
The reality would be somewhat different. Most of the soldiers passing through Shannon Airport are working class people. Some of them fairly impoverished. I've been at the airport myself, and I've seen them in the duty free. What they spend is very little because they can't afford it. Most of the well-to-do officers who travel to the Middle East do so on executive jets, so they don't travel with the ordinary soldiers. And the ordinary soldiers, unfortunately, in a way, are victims of the war as well as the victims that they managed to kill. So, to a large extent, they can't afford much in the duty-free. But yes, they do into the duty-free. And all US soldiers passing through Shannon Airport carry their weapons with them because that's standard practice. Your automatic rifle in the US military is your personal rifle, which is zeroed to your eyesight and whatever.
What do you say to the fact that these planes filled with the soldiers are on their way to peacekeeping? Is that a fallacy or what?
Complete fallacy. In modern terminology, they use a term responsibility to protect, and it's a bogus responsibility. And they use peacekeeping when they mean making war, and it's a complete fallacy. The US was not peacekeeping in Afghanistan. They killed millions of Afghan people, particularly women and children, with drone strikes, and even more, in fact, in Iraq. B-52 bombers of the Vietnam War period were actually used to flatten the city of Mosul in Iraq, and were also used in Syria to flatten the city of Raqqa. There are still bodies several years later lying in the ruins of these two cities. Tens of thousands were killed in both of these cities. And this is what the US calls peacekeeping or responsibility to protect. It's a complete lie and a complete fallacy. Likewise, in Libya, the US and NATO got permission from the UN to impose a no-fly zone. But as soon as they got their fighter jets in the air, they attacked the Libyan army, overthrew the Libyan government, and left Libya in a total state of disaster in the meantime. Likewise in Iraq and Afghanistan. Afghanistan is now in total ruins. Sanctions are imposed, as has been done elsewhere. Libya, Syria, and Afghanistan are suffering severely from the sanctions. So the idea that the US is peacekeeping across the world is a complete misnomer and a complete lie, in my view.
Edward, I just wanted to jump in here because we're going to have to wrap up soon. I wanted to say you were a great supporter of Veterans for Peace members, Tarek Koff and Ken Myers. Tarek from New York and Ken from New Mexico. And you were a huge supporter. Yes. And I know they would love to say send their thanks to you for all the support that everybody for Veterans for Peace from Ireland and Veterans for Peace here in the States.
Yes.
What would happen if permission were denied for these plans to land at Shannon?
Well, almost nothing would happen because the U.S. military doesn't need to land in Shannon. They could land in Belfast, which is at the moment part of the United Kingdom. They're also landing in Scotland and Prestwick. They have loads of U.S. military bases in the U.K., proper in England and Wales. There's absolutely no need to land in Shannon Airport other than to drag in a neutral country like Ireland into their unlawful wars around the world.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a criminal project to involve and incriminate as many other countries as possible in their wrongdoing.
Well, there's a profit then for the Irish government to let them land. Is that, there are landing fees, right?
I actually took a case against the Irish government in 2003, a constitutional case, and the part of it I won, the judge ruled very clearly that allowing US troops through Shannon Airport for the Iraq War in particular in 2003 was in clear breach of international laws and neutrality. So the Irish government has been acting in breach of international laws and neutrality, as well as Irish laws, particularly on the issue of torture and the in breach of the UN Convention Against Torture.
Well, Edward, go ahead, Malachy, one final question, then we'll move on. But
the soldiers, when they disembark, they are armed and in uniform, are they not?
They're always in uniform. They leave their weapons on the aircraft, literally sitting on the seat. And this has been proven by photographs and by some journalists who have been allowed onto the aircraft.
Yes. They,
each soldier carries his automatic rifle with him, almost in his hands. And when he's going into the duty-free, he leaves the rifle behind on the aircraft sitting at Shannon Airport.
So that is armed forces on a neutral country.
Yes, and 3 million, 3 million U.S. troops and more have passed through Shannon Airport since the 2001, the war against Afghanistan. So at least 3 million troops, probably at this stage about 3.5 million troops, have passed both ways through Shannon Airport. All of them are armed with at least automatic rifles.
Well, you're listening to WBAI. We're speaking with Edward Horgan, retired from the Irish Defence Forces, and he was just went through a trial in Dublin, where he was found guilty of trespassing onto Shannon Airport, but found not guilty of spray painting onto the side of a Navy plane. Danger, danger, do not fly. So, Edward, thank you, and thank you from Veterans for Peace here on this side of the Atlantic to Veterans for Peace there in Ireland.
And thank you very much. And please give my best regards both to Maliki and to my Veterans for Peace friends, especially Tarek and Ken in the United States and all the others that I'm very familiar with. So thank you also.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Maliki, just as him being a soldier, you, myself, we're going to go to another soldier. But he was also retired from the fire department here in New York City. And he happened to do a side hustle of being a bookie. And we're going to talk about something I think that's in the papers today and been for the past few days, something called the Super Bowl and the amount of money that is spent gambling on that. And we'll get the lowdown from Billy O'Connor from the Bronx. Now we're going to this should be his national anthem with Kenny Rogers.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us. And he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a
life." Oh, yes. And there it is, the gambler. A yearly routine here on WBAI, which I'm grateful to say, is that we have on the one and only Billy O'Connor. He has a book out called The Bronx, Confessions of the Bronx Bookie, about himself being a bookie in the South Bronx. And we discuss what the odds are and the addiction of gambling. But it's been ramped up unbelievably, 100 times more because of the apps now that are on your phone. And Billy, I want you to deal directly with that, because now we have DraftKings and FanDuel, of which you cannot avoid the commercials on all the NFL games, because I heard on another radio station that out of live television, 89 of the top-ranked shows were in the NFL, and then it was the NBA and the World Cup. What effect is now these apps, the way you don't have to go to the casino and bet, is having on the American population?
Well, John, first of all, thanks to you and Maliki for having me on. It's always great to be on with you guys. In fact, there's been an exponential increase in gambling. I mean, I remember, well, I was an old school bookie, you know, and in the days when I was a bookie, it was so clandestine. The thought of, you know, you had to be careful even telling of friends of yours that you were a bookie. You had to be careful of which friends you told for fear of maybe getting busted. Now they advertise on television, like you said, DraftKings, MGM, with these apps, and what they're doing is appealing, obviously, to what percent of the population deals with apps mostly is young people. You know, they're very phone savvy, very tech savvy, and they want to rope them in. It's a whole new generation, you know, of gamblers, and the amount of gambling that has increased because of it exponentially is insane. I remember when the NFL, when I was a bookmaker, even back in the 60s and 70s, 80s, they tried to disavow gambling as much as they could. You know, when they even put the spreads in the paper, they used to bitch about it and say, well, you know, it has nothing to do with us. The papers are putting the lines in there. We don't encourage gambling. But then they put injury reports and everything else, and who does the injury report cater to except for a gambler? They're the only ones interested in who's playing, who's not playing, field conditions and everything else. But they always disavowed it. Now the NFL has even got a czar for gambling. They've appointed a czar for gambling, which to me is mind-boggling. They're making no bones about it. The money talks, you know, and the amount of money that's going to be made in gambling, they say, is going to surpass the television revenue, which is incredible.
And Billy, how does a nice guy from Cork end up being a bookie in the South Bronx? Did you go to bookie school? Was there an elementary, a high school, or college that you got your degree in bookmaking? How did you become a bookie?
You know, that's not far from wrong. What it was is I was such a compulsive gambler myself. I mean, and my friend, my buddy, my best friend, the two of us were compulsive gamblers, and we knew a lot of compulsive gamblers because gambling is a compulsion like alcohol, like drugs. You're not going to find many heroin addicts sitting in the museum, Metropolitan Museum of Art, admiring a painting. You know what I mean? You're going to find them hanging around with other heroin addicts. And same thing with drinkers. You know, if you're a heavy drinker, you're going to hang around with guys that like to drink. If the person doesn't like to drink, you're like, what the hell I want to hang around him for? It's the same thing with gamblers. There's a whole confederation of them. And we were compulsive.
But don't you get these days now? I mean, it took a long time to get licenses for people to sell alcohol legally, and you're not supposed to serve alcoholics as if you become a diagnostician by just looking at somebody. But it's against the law to sell alcohol to an alcoholic, and then you have. Now, gambling is another. They know is another disease. Is it treated as a disease? And what is the penalty for taking their bets?
Well, you know, Malachi, you couldn't be more right. It is exactly what it is. It's another disease. And as far as taking the bets, the penalty. A bookie's not going to care. I mean, if you call me up to make a bet and I don't take your bet, you probably got five or six other bookies that you can bet with anyway. So yeah. I'm going to take your bet. And the only thing I'm worried about is getting paid as a bookie. So he might put a limit on a compulsive gambler, like the guys that betting every day. He's betting 8-9 games a day. You might say, okay, I'll give you $1,000 limit for the end of the week. If you reach 1,000, you better come up with some cash or I'm going to shut you off. Now, the problem with a bookie is, you don't know how many other bookies he's betting with. So he could be stuck 1,000 with you and stuck 1,000 with four other bookies. And if you got an irresponsible bookie, he might be stuck 4,000 with him. And now the question is, who's going to scare him the most that he's going to pay first?
Yeah.
So it's not really about the penalty for the bookie. It's all they're worried about is getting paid. So, you know, but you couldn't be more right about the compulsion. What happened to me was I was so tired of losing. And I said to my best friend, I said, listen, we both like to gamble. We can't stop gambling.
Yeah.
So why don't we get on the right side of this? Why don't we still gamble, except we'll take the action instead of bet calling up somebody else? You know about 10 guys that bet. I know about 10 guys that bet. I said, let's start our own business. And we did. And I remember sitting very, like it was yesterday, I was talking to him, and I said, listen, we got about 100 players. This was our first year in action. We got about 100 players. I said, how many players do you think are going to win by the end of the year? For the whole year, not just for football season, baseball season, but for the whole year, how many players do you think will win? He said, I don't know. He said, I guess about 8. I said, I would guess about 12. And by the end of the year, we had 0 winners of 100 players. The following year, we had 300 players. At the end of the year, 0 winners. The following year, we had 500 players. At the end of the year, 0 winners. And that's even with sharpshooters, guys that pay attention, guys that get betting services. It just comes down to simple mathematics. If you bet sports, you're going to be a loser. There's just absolutely no way. I mean, a friend of mine is still a bookmaker, and he has a lot of players from Wall Street, high-end players, you know, guys that bet $10,000, $15,000 a game. So they're big players. And they subscribe to these big services. So...
The losers will resort to anything to get the funds on the gambling addiction. I once had when I was in the bar business, I once had a cook, and John, and John was a very nice, as many gamblers are very nice people. But anyway, he was, of course, compulsive, and he lost continually, and his wife divorced him, and she remarried, taking her, their son with her. And the new daddy of the boy asked John about adopting him. And John told me, under no circumstances is there anybody going to buy my kid. I wouldn't sell him for all the money in the world. Well, it didn't take all the money in the world for him to eventually. It took a very small sum. And that was, he actually sold his son to this man, who was new father. So it's, as you so point out, how compulsive and diseased it is. And that's why the government, I suppose, puts licenses on. And I don't know why the government gets moral, or tries to get moral anyway.
We got to figure with DraftKings and MGM, at least the government's getting a slice of it now. They figure at least they're getting taxes on it. But it's encouraging so many young kids and all this fantasy football and all this other stuff. All that's doing is like a – it's like a heroin dealer giving a guy on the street the first tray for free. You know, and this one's on me. You know, see if you like it, you know. So it's just roping them in. But it's absolutely impossible to win. Like I said, my friend, this bookmaker who takes this big action from Wall Street, he sees what they bet. He sees what they pay for the services, and he gets to see it for free. And with all that information, he can't win. So it's just a question of sheer mathematics. You know, if you bet 10 games over the course of a year, if you bet 10 games over the course of a day, if you bet 10 games over the course of a lifetime, with the juice, with the 10% vigorous, you still got to hit 6 out of 10 to break even. You got to hit 7 out of 10 to win a tiny bit of money. You have to win 8 out of 10 to win any real money, and nobody can hit 8 out. Nobody. It's impossible. It can't be done.
Billy, one of the things that people are worried about is there's so much money involved with people gambling that you can fix a game. Now, you've written a book about that the Super Bowl was fixed. I mean, is that even a possibility that you could fix the Super Bowl?
Well, I think it would be very, very difficult now to do it. But I do think it was done. And I'm not the only one who thinks it, and I'm not the only one who wrote a book about it. I wrote a book called The Mars Gamble, that the 1969 Super Bowl was fixed. And I can just about prove it, and I do prove it in the book. But I'm not the only one who thought that game was a little fugazi. Bernie Parrish was a linebacker for the Cleveland Browns and also at the University of Florida. He wrote a book called They Call It a Game. And he says definitively in his book that there was, he played, he knows of at least 3 games he played in that were fixed, and he believes that a Super Bowl was fixed. And the Super Bowl he's referring to is the same game that Art Donovan, who used to play for the Baltimore Colts, was a Bronx boy, went to the same grammar school as me, same high school as me, told me in 1971, after I came back from Nam, that the 69 game was fixed and they got sold out. He said the Carol Rosenblum gave the Jets, Reeve Eubank, their playbook because it behooved him. He had $1 million bet on the other side, taking the 17.5 points with the Jets. But Rosenblum had a whole history of gambling and a whole history of hanging out with known gamblers and out-and-out gangsters. As a matter of fact, the initial NFL owners, all of them make a big show about how the game is so on the level. When they, years ago, they two football players, Paul Hornung and Alex Karras, were suspended for gambling. They were betting $100 a game, and they suspended them. And these were the two big stars of the Green Bay Packers during the glory years. But don't forget, it's the owners that hire the commissioner. Now, it's very difficult for me to believe that somebody who's hired by somebody is going to investigate their boss. So they come down hard on the players for gambling, but there's nothing at all about the owners gambling. And Rosenblum was accused of betting on his own team countless times, even to the point that it went to court.
Billy, what? How? I'm puzzled about how can a game be fixed when you have 100 players popping in and out at various times during the couple of hours the game is played. How can you fix? What do you say? Do you say to a quarterback, you've got to drop the ball here or something? I don't know.
I see your point. The thing is, the amount of money these guys are making now, it would be pretty rough to get to a player. But back in the old days, the deal is you could tell in college, or you could tell in high school, even as far back as high school, but mostly in college, who's going to go to the pros and who's going to be a star. Yeah. And you got to get to them before they make that kind of money. Like, you know, there was always an old thing in New York, whether or not it was true, I can't have any proof of it, but everybody thought Clyde Frazier, Walt Frazier from the Knicks, was on the take, because whenever he had 3-2 to make, 3-2 and the foul shots at the end, he'd always bounce it off that back rim. He could hit that thing like it was, and it would always be the difference between covering and not covering. Now, you don't get to a guy like Walt Frazier when he's a star of the Knicks, but when he was back at the University of Illinois, and he grew up with 8 kids, all you got to do is make that mistake once. And the old adage, basically, if you're not a virgin, well, you're a whore, you know, because nobody, if they get to you once, then they got you forever, because then it's blackmail from there on out. You know, it's if they get to you when you're stupid enough to be a college kid to make that mistake, like Art Schindler, you know, famous, probably the worst case of gambling, yeah. Lost his whole career because of gambling. You get to them when they're in college. But my point is, how can you fix a game? The easiest way would be to get to an official. And nowadays, the game is more and more in the hands of the official. Like, for example, defensive holding in the interior line at a crucial call. I don't even know what defensive holding is in the interior line. They use their hands every play. I mean, how could you call defensive holding on the interior line? Or it's not really a pass interference if it was an uncatchable ball. Well, that's purely subjective. You know, whether a ball is catchable or not depends on the officials. Now, you say to yourself, well, you're not going to make every call bad, but you don't have to. When you're in a game like football, where it's 7 points each score, and they say the average amount of scores in each game will be 3, so it'll be 21-score game or a 28-score game, you're talking about 4 plays. What you got to do is call back one of those plays for pass interference or something like that.
Billy and Maliki, we're going to have to wrap up. But, Billy, before we go, Philly's giving 1.5, and the under-over is 50.5. What are we doing? What is our audience? What are we putting the farm on today?
Well, let's see. The farm is, if the line opened to 51.5. If it's down to 50.5, that means the money's coming in on the under, if you like the total. But the other game is 1.5 and 1, and that's a bookmaker's number. That could go either way. Me, I would be inclined to take the point. I would take the point and say Kansas City, just because that kid's been there. Holmes has been there before, and I like Hurts a lot. Jalen Hurts is a great quarterback, but I don't know. I just think in the big game, he's proven himself, you know, so I would go with it. I can't see. Whenever they say when it's a toss-up, always take the point and a half. Take the points.
Well, can they call you up and make some bets now, Billy?
Yeah, what's your number? Can you want to give out your number over the air here? I want to have people call.
You know what? These days, John, I could probably get away with giving my number out over the phone, on the air.
All right. Billy, we're going to go out with a song by Brendan Behan, who would have turned 100 this week. And it's Brendan Behan singing The Old Triangle. Maliki, thanks for another show that we just needed more time. And Billy, thanks for giving us a little advice. And BAI audience, if you take Billy's advice and you hit on the game today, please donate to the station.
Yeah, grease the pants so the cookies don't stick. Throw a little towards WBAI.
Thanks, Billy.
Thank you, Maliki.
Well, this other song was written by a person who will never hear it recorded because he's not the possessor of a gramophone. He's pretty much of a tramp. A hungry feeling came on me stealing, and the mice, they were squealing in my prison cell. And that old triangle, it went jingle jangle along the banks of the Royal Canal. To begin the morning, the screw was a water, incidentally. To begin the morning, the screw was bawling, Get out of bed and clean up your cell. And that old triangle, it went jingle jangle along the banks of the Royal Canal. Oh, the screw was peeping, and Humpy Gussie lay sleeping as he lay there weeping for his girl Sal. And that old triangle, it went jingle jangle along the banks of the Royal Canal. But in the female prison, there are 70 women, and I wish there was with them that I did dwell. Then that old triangle could go jingle jangle along the banks of the Royal Canal.
Good morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. Radio Free Aaron with John McDonough and Malachi McCourt came to you live over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up at 12 noon is Voices of Resistance with Lucy Pacuada Quesada and Andrea Vizu. Stay tuned.
You're invited to the LSB Outreach and Fundraising Meeting on Monday, February 13th at 7 p.m. Come meet the clean air, clean water loving team that produces Ecologic. By phone, use any Zoom number like 646-558-8656, 646-558-8656. The meeting ID is 922-457-2995 or WBAI-LSB-995. That's 922-457-2995. The passcode, like our frequency, is 995-995-99. You can get more information in the meeting section of WBAI.org. See you at the LSB Outreach and Fundraising Meeting on Monday, February 13th, 7 p.m.
Seem to go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone.
I drove a New York City bus for 32 years, and I get the flu shot every year. When my doctor recommended it, I got the new COVID booster. Certain diseases change over time, especially this one. I'm not taking any chances with my life or with my family's life. I'm just not. If it's going to keep me from being sick, I'm all in for it. The booster works. The booster saves lives. I'm a senior citizen. The COVID booster gives me the protection that I need.
I will not let COVID stop me from living my life.
For more information, visit nyc.gov/vaccinefinder or call 877-VAX4NYC.
That message brought to you by the New York City Department of Health. This is WBAI New York.
Division Zero Initiative reminds you that speeding ruins lives. Drivers, always look for pedestrians and cyclists and slow your turns to 5 miles per hour.
Greetings, Tri-State. Imhotep, Gary Burke, Radio GBE, Mind Flight, on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. Pass the word and join us every Sunday afternoon, 1 to 3 p.m., right after church and after our early Wake Up Everybody show down the dial. It's culture, consciousness, community, and the special blend of infotainment and edutainment you've come to expect from Radio GBE. Sunday, 1 to 3 p.m., right here on 99.5 FM, WBAI.
Up in the morning and out to school.
Hello,
everyone. This is Leahni Hameson with Talk Out of School, inviting you to join me and co-host Daniel Alisea at our new day and time, Sundays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking about all the latest news and controversies related to our public schools here in New York City and nationally, with special guests including educators, parent leaders, advocates, and experts in their field. We also want to hear from you. So please tune in this Sunday and every Sunday from now on for Talk Out of School on listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM or at WBAI.com.